Hello again, this is Debbie back, Wednesday, December 9th, 2015, with the death notices in the Herald and Review, Decatur. Decatur, Summers, James. James Jim Summers, 75, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, December 6th, 2015. Services will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, December 12th, 2015, at Unity Baptist Church, corner of Highway 185 and Airport Road, Vandalia, former Temple Baptist Church. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 Friday, December 11th, at Holt and File Funeral Home, 204 North 4th Street in Vandalia, and 1 hour prior to services Saturday at the church. Burial will follow in Maplewood Cemetery, St. Elmo, Illinois. Memorials may be made to donor's choice. Windsor, Dick, Delbert Buxton. Delbert Buxton Dick, 92, a Windsor, passed away peacefully in his sleep at 9 a.m. December 6th at St. Mary's Hospital, surrounded by family members. Family would like to express their sincere gratitude to the personnel at Aspen Creek O'Sullivan, where he's received loving care and kindness. Also to Dr. Bukhari and the nurses on the fourth floor of St. Mary's. Reed Funeral Home Sullivan's in charge of arrangements. Condolences may be sent to the family at the funeral home. Decatur, Richardson, H. Sherlene. H. Sherlene Richardson, 83, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, December 6th, at St. Mary's Hospital with her family by his side. Concelebrated Mass, a Christian burial to celebrate her life, will be 11 a.m. Thursday, December 10th, at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, Reverend Richard Welton, main celebrant. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 Wednesday, tonight, at 6 to 8 at Moran and Gerbel Funeral Home with a vigil prayer service at 5:30 p.m. Burial will be at Bowling Springs Cemetery in Decatur. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, Holy Family Catholic Church, or Decatur Catholic Radio, WDCR. Assumption, Sloan, Clarence. Clarence Sloan, 91, of Assumption, Illinois, passed away at 6:30 a.m. on Monday, December 7th, 2015, in his residence. Private family services will be held. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 5 to 7 on Thursday, December 10th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Macon, with Masonic Rites service at 7 p.m. Clarence will be laid to rest next to his wife, Marilyn, in South Macon Township Cemetery with military rights provided by Assumption Honor Guard. Memorial contributions may be directed to the Shriners Hospital for Children, 4400 Clayton Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri, 63131. Decatur, Gifford. John David Gifford, 81, of Decatur, died at 8:43 a.m. Sunday, December 6th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A graveside service to celebrate his life will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, December 10th, in Macon County Memorial Park. Pastor James LaCrone will officiate. There'll be no visitation. Memorials will be made to the Children's Home in Carmi, C-A-R-M-I, Illinois, Carmi. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of arrangements. Decatur, Marikel, Dale L. Dale L. Marikel, 92, of Waukesha, Wisconsin, formerly of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, December 5th, at Oak Hill Terrace, Waukesha, Wisconsin. A graveside service to celebrate and honor Dale's life will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, December 11th, at Point Pleasant Cemetery, Long Creek, Illinois. Dawson and Wyckoff Westwood Street Funeral Homes assisting the family with arrangements. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials be made to the First United Methodist Church Decatur or Salvation Army. Also on the obituary praise Page, King's Gravesite to Get Courtyard, Jackson, Mississippi, AP. Nearly 7 months after blues legend B.B. King died, his Mississippi gravesite is being turned into a serene spot where blues fans can pay their respects. At ceremony Friday, a black credit marker at a ceremony Friday, a black credit marker will be unveiled, engraved with a signature that will become the centerpiece of a memorial courtyard outside the B.B. King Museum and Delta Interpretive Center in Indianola. The courtyard with benches eventually be surrounded by walls that alternate between solid panels engraved with song titles and wooden slats that allow breezes to pass through the space. King was 89 when he died, May 14th at his home in Las Vegas. He was buried 2 weeks later at the museum in Indianola, the hometown in the Mississippi Delta cotton country where he first sang and played guitar on street corners as a young man and where he continued to play annual concerts until a year before his death. Expenses to develop the memorial courtyard will be paid partly by King's estate and partly by private donations to the museum. Mississippi's Economic Development Agency is also contributing about $50,000 because it's a tourist attraction. He was a great man, and we are honored to have his final resting place here at the place that bears his name, Museum Director Malika Pokley said in a statement Tuesday. Also in Section D, Faith and Values. Live like you're dying, widow of Beach G. Nevitt writes, Book of Faith and Hope. This is by Teresa Churchill of the Herald and Review. She's a senior staff writer there. Decatur. Writing about a life shattered by not one, but two devastating tragedies was one of the most difficult things Brenda Nevitt has ever done. But she had to do it, just as she had to go on after the death of her daughter, Melissa, from a brain hemorrhage on October 31st, 2004, at age 24, and that of her husband, BG, from a motorcycle accident on August 17th, 2013, at age 55. A year after he died, I just felt that God said I had a story of hope that would help people and I should begin to travel and speak, she said. I also knew in the back of my mind at some point I would write a book about our journey of faith together. The result is a self-published book called Shattered, Picking Up the Pieces of a Broken Heart. Her story begins with a miracle of how a friend's invitation to go to a church camp the summer before her freshman year in high school transformed her and eventually her father, mother, and sister as well. It quickly arrives, however, at July 28, 1974, the day she met her future husband at the grand opening of the new church when they were both 16. He wore a powder blue leisure suit and was standing in front of the church singing with his mom and sister, Nevitt Wright. Oh my goodness, he was a cute and he was a singer. During the meal after the open house, she also began to learn BG was someone who went after what he wanted when he came over, sat next to her, and asked her to go out with him for ice cream after the evening service. They married on March 12, 1977, his second day of work for a local car dealership, a job he landed through sheer persistence. BG and Brenda said their I do's just hours after he sold his first car. After the births of their two daughters and 5 years had passed, God led the young family away from the Quad Cities to a small older congregation in Jacksonville, whose pastor had died suddenly. BG told he had felt he was supposed to call his grandpa Oliver and offer to help him at this church, Nevitt writes. God had a plan. It wasn't the way we thought it happened, but God was sending us to a church with almost no youth to be youth pastors. Attendance grew, both in Jacksonville and at a suburban Chicago church where he accepted a full-time pastorate in 1985. After two couples from Decatur visited his church in 1991, a deacon from Glad Tidings Assembly of God invited him to become the pastor and rebuild the church. The Nevitts came, but reluctantly, for they loved their church and friends in Grace Lake, so God did something special for their daughters, who dog had died several weeks before. The morning after Glad Tidings voted, the family answered an ad in the Herald and Review for a 2-year-old Yorkie before heading back north, and just as they were paying for the dog, another potential buyer came running up to the door wanting the dog sight unseen. God knew that this little dog would be just what the little girls needed for this traumatic move, Nevitt Wright. I love God, how God sometimes thinks of the little things in life that can be a blessing. Evett continued to see blessings even after deaths of her younger daughter and husband. She remembers a group of men who came by to rake their leaves the afternoon after Melissa's death without ever coming to the door. Then a little later, after a small boy rang the doorbell and yelled trick-or-treat, and she and her husband found roses had been left on the front porch and all down the front sidewalk. Then, nearly 9 years later, God gave Evett the strength to attend all three services at church, their church home, for 22 years the day after BG was killed. In the midst of grief, I decided I would try to look for things I could be thankful for and write them in my journal. Among them was finding a new home where she and her daughter and son-in-law, Amy and Derek Grove, and her two grandchildren could live together while having separate space. Another was finally overcoming health problems that had plagued her through 2013 and the first part of 2014. She writes in her final chapter, "One thing I admired about BJ was that at some point he decided he was going to live life to the fullest. On that Saturday morning in August, as he lay in the emergency room, I don't think he was full of 'I wish.' I think he was content with life he'd lived. He'd lived a life loving God. He loved his family, the church he served, and had done things he thought he could never do. BJ would encourage you to live like you were dying. Take time to think about what you want your life to look like at the end and start living it. There'll be more rain, but as difficulties, challenges, and sometimes great heartaches come our way, each of us will gets to decide how we will handle it." End of that article. Under Home and Garden, Houseworks, Where, Oh, Where Have My Tools Gone? By Steve Beatty for the Herald and Review. I occasionally get workshop tips and project ideas via email from several companies. One recent suggestion was to attach a bin to a workbench for stuff you don't want cluttering the surface. All I could think of was, great, another place to lose my tools. I have a terrible problem with missing tools when I'm working in the shop. I'm fine if I'm working out if I'm out in the yard or on the roof, because I'll be wearing my tool belt, which has all kinds of nifty pockets and loops for temporary tool storage. I use them religiously. Side note, why is there no place for a speed square? There's usually a loop for a tri-square, which I almost never use, but nothing for that big chunk of aluminum, which I use several times a day for measuring, for marking angles, for a straight edge. Just an idea for whatever tool belt manufacturers may be reading this. But in the shop, not so much. Whatever tool I'm using, I simply set aside on the bench or table saw or joiner or floor until I need it again. Later, I spend several minutes searching for it, pawing through the sawdust and shavings, glancing from wherever I'm working to all the places I might have been working the last time I used whatever it was. Side note, tool manufacturers who also likely read Houseworks could attach little locator devices to hand tools, like the fobs people use to find their missing car keys. Then I'd have to do is keep track of one gadget to send out a distress signal to my missing tools. I'm sure I could handle that. When I'm carving, I often have a dozen chisels, gouges, and hook knives in various sizes scattered across the bench. About the only time I can easily lay my hands on the one I need is during the few minutes immediately after sharpening them. It doesn't help that some come as sets, and those all have the same handles. But I all have most trouble with missing pencils. By the end of the project, I may have a half a dozen pencils scattered around the shop, one on each of the three benches, another on the table saw, another on the joiner, a few more that have rolled off onto the floor and taken refuge in the sawdust, etc. Why not just sweep up the dust, you ask? Because my bench brush, which has a yellow handle that ought to be very easy to spot, has also vanished. Why not wear that handy-dandy tool belt in the shop? Because, convenient as they are, tool belts are majorly uncomfortable. The hammer is particularly dangerous when you consider where and at what level it hangs. Enough said. Well, why not tuck your pencil in your pocket with your keys or stick it behind your ear? I don't know. Either would make perfect sense, but I don't. It's apparently so much simpler just to drop the pencil on whatever flat surface is most convenient, never to be seen again. Actually, that's not true. All my tools eventually reappear when I clean up and put things away at the end of the job, when I don't need them any longer. Sigh. One last thing. If you do attach the email recommended tool bin to your bench, be sure to drill a bunch of holes in its bottom so the sawdust can sift through. Better yet, cover the bottom with galvanized steel mesh. End of his article. In the life section, section D, scientists reveal mysteries of the brain. This is Dothea Ricks, the Tribune News Service writer, out of Melville, New York. The human brain, a three-pound organ and source of symphonies, mathematics, politics, hate, and crime, is often hailed as the most complex biological entity in the known universe. Some scientists call it a universe itself, one of the last great frontiers. In recent months, scientists have uncovered some of the brain's deepest secrets. One team has revealed how sleeping posture is important to brain health. Another has elucidated the circuitry that is cued when confronted with something unexpected, how the brain reacts to the element of surprise. Both are providing new clues about the life's master organ. The discoveries arrive only 2 years into a grand challenge by the Obama administration, which has called on neuroscientists to map the human brain. Most investigators have been racing all along, some searching for a switch that turns on dreams, other on the hunt for causes of neurodegenerative disorders. One goal is to further demystify the organ's bewildering circuitry, characterized by 100 billion connections among brain cells. Biophysicist Partha Mitra of Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory, a 2014 recipient of a Brain Initiative grant, said, "Despite centuries of cumulative knowledge, more is known about some of the deepest reaches of the cosmos than regions within the labyrinths of the brain." "I have said that many, many times," noted Mitra, who is using his $300,000 grant to develop conceptual and physical tools to help neuroscientists better explore the brain. He is also leading the lab's Mouse Brain Architecture Project, an ambitious effort to decipher how neurons, brain cells that underlie all higher function, connect. "In the human brain," he said, "a single neuron, through its branching projections, can make up to 10,000 connections, contributing to the billions upon billions brain-wide." Yet Mitra is not alone in his pursuit to peel away some of the brain's mystery. Scientists at Stony Brook University's School of Medicine are asking a deceptively simple question. Does a lateral sleeping position promote brain health? So far, their investigative evidence suggests a resounding yes. Dr. Helene Benaviste and her team have found that sleeping on either the right or left side helps the brain more effectively clear the daily accumulation of waste molecules. These byproducts of metabolism develop as the organ performs its enormous task. The brain is one of the most metabolic organs in the body, and it has to work very hard to get rid of these small molecules, said Benaviste, who studied the so-called glymphatic system of rodents to gain an understanding of what likely also happens in people. The glymphatic system is a waste clearance pathway in the mammalian central nervous system and is regulated during the sleep cycle. Its role is to flush away debris that ultimately is degraded. The pathway was only recently defined and derives part of its name from the brain's glial cells, G-L-I-A-L, glial cells, key constituents that support neurons. The pathway substitutes for a lymphatic system, which the brain lacks. Benaviste contends her research could possibly open new vistas of understanding into risks for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases. And it's not a leap of faith, she contends, to correlate what happens in rodents to what likely occurs in humans. In terms of waste transport, the side posture provides superior to back or stomach sleeping, the team found. Moreover, sleeping laterally is common among mammals, Benaviste said, suggesting an inborn brain protective reason for that preference. Humans, hibernating bears, domesticated dogs and cats, numerous members of the animal kingdom, spend part or all their time during the sleep cycle on their sides. Our analysis shows that the glymphatic transport was most efficient in the lateral position, Benaviste said. End of that article. Another article for the Tribune News Service, Debbie Carlson. Bored with the holiday? Maybe traditions need an update. The holidays are coming, and that often means falling into routine get-togethers with family and friends. While they are undoubtedly cherished traditions that everyone looks forward to, others can be as welcome as a stale fruitcake. First, lose the guilt. If you would rather take a pass on the communal viewing of It's a Wonderful Life, making holiday cookies nobody seems to want anymore, or hosting that December party whose luster has faded, people who have holiday burnout shouldn't feel bad, said Samuel T. Gladding, professor of counseling at Wake Forest University. People get tired of doing the same thing year after year, day after day, holiday after holiday, Gladding said. Instead, to avoid having the holidays feel as if they are on autopilot, consider introducing new activities, adding a new dish to the holiday meal, or modernizing decorations. These are just some of the ideas to tweak the routine to make the season feel less like the movie Groundhog Day and more like a chance to spend quality time together. When considering a change, revisit why a certain tradition exists, said Francine Rosenberg, psychologist with Morris Psychological Group in Parsippany, New Jersey, Parsippany. New Jersey. Is it based on convenience? Where is the family located? Rosenberg asked, adding that these are the kinds of questions to ask when considering whether a tradition still serves a purpose. Although it may be tempting to completely jettison tradition, P.J. McGuire, owner of Modette, an etiquette and interpersonal skills training firm in Chicago, advises against anything too extreme. Try infusing the parts you do enjoy about the holidays with new ideas to make an updated family tradition, McGuire said. Revise the recipe nobody really likes. Change dinner to brunch or suggest a potluck at a fun location beside someone's home. Here are some more tips to liven up the holidays. Change the time frame. Routines don't have to have strict timelines, Gladding said. Rearrange how you approach the season, such as when you'll do the baking, the shopping, when you send holiday cards. Make new memories. One idea, said Susan Palma, co-author of the coffee table book, Sophistication is Overrated, is to make cookies together but make the recipe as simple as possible. Get people over ahead of time to make them and choose easy ones everyone can make, like thumbprint cookies. It's a great way to spend time together. Add new activities. As families grow, it's a good time to add something new, Rosenberg said. Younger generations are going to want new traditions and take ownership, she said. Children feel very proud when they can participate in adding a new family tradition that sticks and becomes part of their holiday for years to come. That may mean letting go of some activities that no longer appeal to everyone. Share family history and accentuate the positive. Pull out old family photographs and gather everyone together to look and talk about achievements, Gladding said. Sharing family history strengthens individuals and it strengthens families. If you know the past, you're much more likely to benefit from it and be inspired and determined to make the future better or at least as good as the past. Add some personality to the tree. A Christmas tree should reflect the person it belongs to, said Jung Lee, co-founder of FET, an event planning and design production firm in New York. Think of what brings a lot of joy and excites you. That's what the tree should be. Communication is key to before updating traditions. No one likes being left out of the loop, McGuire said. If you're going for a complete overhaul of holiday traditions during your turn as host, let everyone know what to expect and how they can be involved. You never know. Your great aunt may have some amazing ideas she was afraid to try. End of the article. On to the Decatur Tribune. We'll have an article and then in the editorial from Paul Osborne. This is his city beat on it. Decatur City Council approves 2016 budget, two tax increases with another tax increase likely at next meeting. The Decatur City Council Monday night voted 6-1 in favor of the city's 2016 budget, a spending roadmap driven in part by a projected $4.3 million deficit, increasing costs, and stagnant revenues. Councilman Bill Faber voted against the budget. Members also voted in support of an increase in the local utility tax and hotel use tax to help fund critical city operations and to begin rebuilding government cash reserves. An increase in the city's portion of the property tax has also been proposed as part of a collection of revenue enhancements, with official action expected at the December 21st meeting. As approved on Monday, next year's city budget will be funded in partly by an increase in the utility tax from 1.25% to 4.25%, which is expected to generate $3.7 million in new revenue. An increase in the hotel use tax from 6 to 8%. If approved, the property tax levy for next year would increase by $1.725 million over last year and add an estimated $52 to the tax bill of the owner of a $100,000 home. The proposed budget will provide the current basic service to resident and stakeholders, including public safety protection. Community and public service works while beginning the critical steps to begin rebuilding cash reserves. Okay, now we have Paul Osborne's City Beat. Utility tax. City Council votes to more than triple rate of what a previous council passed as a temporary tax. In quote, increase the utility tax from 1.25% to 4.25%, generating $3.7 million in new revenue. The sentence sums up one of the simple tax increases approved at the Monday night City Council meeting in an effort to raise more revenue to deal with a bleak financial picture. What I found interesting about the large increase in the utility tax is that the tax was originally imposed as a temporary tax by a previous City Council as a means of getting over a financial hump in a budget over a dozen years ago. The utility tax and a few other taxes were debated long and hard, and finally agreement reached to pass the taxes. Some have since argued that the utility tax was never meant to be a temporary tax, but a permanent tax, which I find at odds with the way I remember passage when I was in the audience the night it was approved, not only as editor of the mayor, but as mayoral candidate. I remember what I heard, and I was certainly under the impression that the utility tax was a temporary tax. A few years later, after I was elected to my first term as mayor, I made the attempt to reduce or eliminate the utility tax. You'd have thought I had kicked somebody's family pet. We can't do without that money, I was told repeatedly, not only by some of the staff members, but by some city council members. The tax became permanent. No one remains on council from the city council that passed the temporary tax, so no member of the present council can be accused of lying about the temporary utility tax when they passed it. Anyway, I'm sure their intentions were honest when they passed the tax, and they felt it would be the only temporary just to get over a financial bump in the road, kind of like what the city council is facing at the present time. However, I think it demonstrates why most citizens don't have much confidence in promises from government, whether it be local, state, or federal. When it comes to taxes, the word temporary is meaningless unless the sunset on a particular tax is part of the temporary tax contract with the public. Even though a sunset provision was added to the utility tax increase Monday night so that another council will have to approve it to keep the increase once it expires to 2020, don't count on the increase going away then. Next paragraph. I think it's also important to remember that city council members come and go over the years. As I mentioned, none of the council members who passed the utility tax years ago are presently on the council, and I'm not even sure all the present council members realized the utility tax was a temporary tax since there was no sunset provision when it was passed years ago. That's what happens as city councils come and go, and original intentions of council members in passing a tax or an increase in tax is forgotten. I believe I can safely write that the utility tax is now a permanent part of our community's growing tax load and is highly unlikely to be eliminated in 2020. By the way, increasing the utility tax from 1.25% to 4.25% will generate $3.7 million in new revenue, more than any other tax increase proposal, including the hike in the property tax. Last paragraph. I think a city that is struggling to get its financial house in order through multiple increases in taxes and fees on a declining population, while TIF zones are not producing as projected, makes this a much more difficult community to sell to businesses and to people we want to attract here or keep here. I would think Road Decatur and the Economic Development Corporation in Decatur and Macon County must be a bit shell-shocked by the proposed and past tax increase. It's hard enough to sell Illinois as a solid business-friendly environment, but the city of Decatur's fee and taxation increases in the past few years are counterproductive in economic development that we so desperately need. That is the end of that editorial and article for the Decatur Tribune for Wednesday, December 9th, 2015. It's also the end of Section 2 for Decatur. This is Debbie Sang. I will talk to you again next week.